Good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, October the 4th, 2018. You are tuned into the Now program, currently 17 minutes past the hour, and we want to thank legendary comedian Shecky Green for being on in hour number one. He is always a lot of fun. Now, as many of you know, we are going to be electing the 70th governor of the state of Ohio in about 32 days from now, and we have had Attorney General, Republican candidate for Governor Mike DeWine on this program. We have had former Attorney General, Democratic candidate for Governor Rich Cordray on this program, and this hour I'm very pleased to welcome to this program for the first time filmmaker, political activist, and libertarian candidate for Governor here in Ohio, Travis Irvine. Travis, how are you?
Hey, Scott. Thanks so much for having us.
It's good to have you on. Travis, tell us a little bit about your past.
Well, sure. I got involved with what I would say third-party or independent politics actually at a young age. In 1992, I was the only kid in my class to vote for Ross Perot in the mock presidential election. So for me, you know, I've always been pretty much against the duopoly establishment two-party system. And this especially came to reality for me as I turned 18 in August 2001, and a month later, the world was a very different place. And, you know, during the Bush-Cheney administration, I really thought that I was a Democrat because I was against the wars and I was against the encroachment on civil liberties that we were going through with the Patriot Act. I was also very against the drug war. It always seemed pretty unfair to me. And I thought these issues were things that made me a Democrat. And by 2006, as the Democrats slowly started to regain power, I just saw that they were a different side of the same establishment coin. And then in May 2007, I was watching a Republican presidential debate, and there was a candidate there from Texas, and he talked about how he was against the war, and he was pro-civil liberties, and he was against the drug war. And I'm like, whoa, who is this, an anti-war Republican? Wow. This is a whole new world for me. And my friend told me, well, that's Ron Paul. He's a libertarian. And at the time, I didn't really know what a libertarian was, but once I looked into it, I was pretty much hooked from there. So that same year, 2007, I ran for mayor of my hometown, Bexley, Ohio. It's actually where the governor's mansion is, so I'm already going to save taxpayers' money on the U-Haul. And basically what happened in that year, we were dealing with a spending budget crisis in our city. We were dealing with businesses that didn't want to come and do work in the city. And all the ideas that I ended up putting forth, even down to the idea of building the new police station that we had to build, it was my idea to build it eco-friendly because it saves money later on down the line. A lot of these ideas were actually implemented by the mayor and city council in the years to follow, even though I did not win that election. I went on to run for U.S. Congress with the Libertarian Party of Ohio. In 2010, we, of course, had a full slate of candidates statewide, many congressional. But that's because we had ample ballot access at that time. For anyone that doesn't know, I mean, 2012 came and went, and I worked for Gary Johnson's campaign. Gary Johnson at that time was the most successful Libertarian candidate as our ideas continued to gain ground with other millennials like myself. But in 2014, our gubernatorial candidate, Charlie Earle, former state rep, was so popular with the Tea Parties and the conservative groups that John Kasich's cronies in the legislature and elsewhere basically pulled a dirty trick on the Libertarian Party of Ohio, and that they redefined the minor party ballot access laws with SB 193 in 2013 and 14. And then they went even further by kicking off Charlie Earle, spending about $600,000 to kick off Charlie Earle off of the ballot. The reason that was a big deal is because with the new rules, we had to get 3% of the vote minimum to retain ballot access for 4 years. It's pretty hard to do that in a gubernatorial race, because it's the gubernatorial candidate who has to get that 3%. It's pretty hard to do that when you don't have a gubernatorial candidate on the ballot. So we have put in our work and our time. We've spent over $200,000 on regaining ballot access, including thousands of volunteer hours, including myself getting signatures. And we're proud to be back on the ballot to give Ohioans a different choice besides the two establishment duopoly candidates.
Now, you're saying that John Kasich did this. Was that 2012 or 2010 or 2014?
That was 2014. We had a Libertarian candidate in the race in 2010. As I said, 2012, Gary Johnson. This is actually one of his favorite states to come and campaign in the 2012 election. So it was prior to 2014. 2013 is when the ball started rolling on this minor party ballot access rule, SB 193. They actually delayed some parts of it till after the 2014 election because it was found unconstitutional because it was so close to the 2014 election. But again, Republicans, they really wanted John Kasich's win margin to be big enough for him to run for president in 2016. So they found a technicality on our signatures with Charlie Earle in 2014 and went to Husted. Of course, Husted stepped right in line, and Charlie Earle got kicked off the ballot off of a technicality that previously had never been enforced. So it's just more dirty tricks from specifically the Republicans in power in Columbus to basically take away other options on the ballot.
Now, for people who don't know, what is a libertarian?
Well, it's a pretty simple way of putting it. There's a couple ways, really. I mean, politically, I find that we take the best of the blue and the best of the red. We take some of the better aspects of the Democrats and some of the better aspects of the Republicans. We basically embrace personal freedom. So, you know, anything social pertaining to people's social choices, personal choices, we are okay with all of that. And then I would say we take the economic freedoms of the Republicans, you know, lower taxes, lower regulations, allow businesses to thrive, allow people to create their own businesses. So it's really about freedom. It's about being the pro-freedom alternative, both in personal life, in economic life, and getting the government out of it. I would say, you know, it's the only time any laws or government need to come into place. Libertarians have a threshold. It's essentially don't hurt anybody and don't take their stuff. If you're not hurting anybody, you're not taking anybody's stuff, then there should not be a law in place.
Now, for example, our current governor, John Kasich, now he was for the expansion of Medicaid in Ohio, but Mike DeWine is not for that, the Republican, but Rich Cordray, I believe, is for keeping that in place, but the Republican legislature really didn't want it. Now, where do the Libertarians fall on that?
Well, sure. Actually, a little correction on it. Mike DeWine is actually in favor of Medicaid expansion. He was very vague about it during the primary because he had to win the Republican primary against Mary Taylor. So he was very vague on that issue up until about July when he said he would keep Medicaid expansion with some reforms, which just means he wants to make it bigger and spend more money on it. And you're absolutely right about Cordray. He also wants to keep it in place. So Libertarians, essentially, we are the only candidates on the ballot who are actually against the Medicaid expansion, but not in a way that, you know, that we are monsters and don't want people to have health care. We just find that in terms of government-based health care, it's the most expensive way to get people health care. And you can see it right now with Kasich's program. I mean, the Dispatch has been doing a lot of great reporting on this. You have pharmaceutical benefit managers, PBMs, who are basically inserting themselves in a process. And they've taken about $225 million taxpayer dollars just by being involved with that program. CVS lobbyists are another great example within the Medicaid expansion program, just in terms of they've inserted themselves, and they've got exclusive rights to essentially providing cancer medications and HIV medicines. So that means the government can only go to CVS for these medicines, and the patients can only get their medicines through CVS. And what's CVS doing? Oh, well, of course, they're rigging the market. They're charging 5 to 6 times as much than the market value for a lot of these prescription drugs. So it's not about not giving people health care. It's about essentially realizing that all health care legislation and laws in our country are written by health care insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies, and they insert themselves into these equations with government mandates to make more and more money off of taxpayers. And it's not right and it's not fair. So libertarians, you know, I don't want to end Medicaid expansion overnight. I do think that would be a bit cruel, but our policy that we put forth is a gradual rollback of the Medicaid expansion. And really what we need to do on the same piece of legislation is open up the free market. Let's let Ohioans buy health insurance across state lines. Let's let them buy minimum coverage the way you can do with auto insurance. If these things were in place, insurance prices would be a lot cheaper. And along those same lines, you know, let's talk about an idea that Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders agreed on in a CNN debate last year, and that is allowing Americans to buy prescription drugs from Canada. We are right here with Canada. Ohioans should be able to go there and buy prescription drugs at a fraction of the price. A Democrat candidate for governor in Colorado, Jared Polis, actually has the same exact idea that I do, that, again, if you break open the market and take away some of these regulations, that's when you're going to start to see a lot of these costs on healthcare drop.
Isn't one of the arguments against allowing people to buy the bare minimum when it comes to healthcare is that if they are hit with a catastrophic illness like cancer, that what do they do at that point? Are insurance companies allowed to deny them? How much does their rate go up? What happens in that particular situation?
Well, sure. I mean, that's an example where if the health insurance company does not provide you with that care once you are taken with an illness like that, you know, that's when the free market starts to strike back. That's when customers are all going to start saying, well, wait a minute, what are we supposed to do? Why am I paying you all this money when you don't actually come through on the service that you said you would provide? Right now with Obamacare, we have the opposite of that. We have, you know, take my sister, for example. She bought into Obamacare. The premiums go up every single month. And then finally, she hurts her foot playing soccer, and then it's $4,000 out of pocket because the insurance doesn't cover it. Well, guess what? They're covered by the government. There's not much my sister can do. So she's been paying into the Obamacare system, and then when it finally comes time to utilize the care, they don't provide it. You know, I'm up here in Cleveland right now in between interviews, and it's the same thing I found up here. Friends spending $350 a month on health insurance, but they only go to the doctor once a year. I currently, as a millennial, do not have health insurance. I haven't had it for a while. I paid the individual mandate begrudgingly when I didn't have it. But, you know, otherwise I'm a healthy person, and I only would have to see a doctor who was a conscientious objector to the healthcare system. He was happy to take any patients who did not have insurance. And I'd only have to see him once a year at tops for sometimes just a bad cold. So, you know, I understand the idea of having peace of mind with health insurance. But we have to recognize that a lot of these companies aren't doing what they say they're going to do, but they're protected by the laws that they have basically written for themselves, and then they pay off politicians to keep them in place. We've got to break this up.
Isn't, just one last note on healthcare, one of the reasons that this is one of the few cases where the Republicans and the Democrat running for governor do agree that they should keep this in place, isn't that mainly, I mean, they can believe it, and I'm not saying they don't believe in it, but that it's popular, that people don't want it taken away?
Well, sure. I think any politician looks at the amount of people, you know, in terms of votes. They probably look at, oh, 700,000 Ohioans, I can just get their votes right now by coming out in favor of it. That's certainly, I think, what DeWine has done, because, again, he was very vague about it. And certainly conservatives and Tea Party groups, that's why they don't like John Kasich and Mike DeWine. They didn't like the way that the Medicaid expansion happened, the way that John Kasich basically went around the state legislature. So, yes, you could easily say for a lot of politicians, they see that 700,000 Ohioans are on Medicaid, so they're like, okay, well, I'm going to want those votes. And I would say that's definitely why DeWine came out in favor of it. Probably not so much Cordray, but, you know, for me, it's not about taking away healthcare from these folks. It's just about giving different options and better options. I think if we, again, this is a more of a national issue, but there are things we can do here in Ohio to bring down healthcare costs, to allow people to see doctors for cheaper, to allow them to obtain insurance cheaper, and certainly allow them to get prescription drugs cheaper.
Now, you do have ballot access in Ohio now. We have had two gubernatorial debates, and there are two people in these debates, the Republican and the Democrat. Now, why is it the Libertarian and the Green Party, who have ballot access, are not allowed in these debates?
Well, that is a great question. I have a degree from Columbia Journalism School, and I can tell you that when you're not including all parts of the story, your story is inherently not accurate. So that's why I appreciate outlets like yours inviting us on. This morning, I was actually up here in Cleveland in the Plain Dealer Cleveland.com editorial board meeting. They are the only major newspaper in Ohio to include all of the candidates on the ballot in the meeting. The Green Party candidate chose not to come to this meeting, but I was in there for the first time with Mr. Corgi and Mr. DeWine. And I think once they release the video, you'll see why it's good to have more voices in these debates. I mean, you've seen the first two debates. I've been confined to live tweeting them because they haven't included us. They, essentially came up with a new threshold. I remember when I ran for U.S. Congress in 2010 in the 12th District against Pat Tiberi, I was excluded from the televised debates with WOSU because the threshold was to be polling at 5% in an independent poll. I was polling at 4% that year. Sure enough, this year, an Innovation Ohio poll in early September had me at 6%. So our campaign team was pretty excited. And then sure enough, the next day they announced the threshold for the debates that you're speaking about is 10%. There's kind of this joke and a meme going around. Well, what's the threshold for getting into the debate? Oh, it's always just 5% more than where the Libertarian is polling. I do think it's unfair. We currently have legal action. We filed a complaint with the Ohio Ethics Commission. Specifically, the debate this coming Monday, their third and final debate, is being held at the City Club of Cleveland. Now, the City Club of Cleveland is a nonprofit. They've always had all candidates. They had our candidates in 2014 and 2010 at this forum. It's usually pretty accepted that all candidates on the ballot are invited. Especially when there's just three or four. You know, we're not adding too much more in terms of time constraints. So, City Club of Cleveland is in direct violation of their nonprofit status, and that's why they've offered us a token event on October 15th. Which I believe only the Green Party candidate has said that she will attend. But what they should be doing is inviting us to all of the debates, absolutely. And I, like you said, I've been watching the debates. I think they descend into just pure petty arguments about Mr. DeWine and Mr. Cordray's records. I agree with both of them. Both of them have terrible records as attorneys general. And I think, again, once you see this Cleveland.com editorial board video come out, whenever they put it out, you'll see the value of having a different voice in the race. I think I kept them more focused on the issues, and I think, really, I spoke for the majority of Ohioans when I told them to stop arguing about each other's records and just focus on the issues.
Well, you were with them just this morning, first time that's happened. What is your, how'd you feel it went with DeWine this morning?
In terms of myself and Mr. DeWine?
How did you think he did, and what was your interactions with him like?
I'll speak generally about my interactions with both of them. I mean,
is there any difference?
Men who have worked in government a long time, but, you know, I would say after 2016, we've shown that American voters don't want any more establishment politicians. And these guys are surely, they are very establishment. Mr. DeWine, I don't agree with him on several issues. The way he wants to fight the opioid crisis is basically just by spending more taxpayer dollars on enforcement incarceration. That's not going to solve it. I've advocated for fast-tracking our medical marijuana program and eventually prepping Ohio for a full legal marijuana, because in states where they have ample medical and legal marijuana, the opioid crisis is 25% less deadly, harmful, and expensive. Mike DeWine just doesn't seem to get it. He said that he would veto anything that would legalize marijuana. Which is just really another old, outdated answer from an old, outdated politician. Let's also add on to the fact, I did my due diligence for debating. I watched the Plain Dealer endorsement meeting between DeWine and Mary Taylor from earlier this spring. And, you can see why a lot of conservatives don't trust Mike DeWine. You can see why the Toledo Tea Party group and the Northwestern Conservative Coalition PAC up there in Toledo have both endorsed me, saying, check the Libertarian box or leave it blank. That's how much they don't like Mike DeWine. And you can see it in the meeting today. His answers to a lot of the problems are, he was very vague on gun control before, but now he's for gun control. He was very vague on Medicaid expansion, but now he wants to keep Medicaid expansion. A lot of the other problems they mentioned, opioid crisis, education, he just had more big government solutions. And so that's why I think, you know, with Mr. DeWine in particular, a lot of Republican voters are not going to vote for him. And they are looking at Libertarian Party candidates like myself.
Well, and tell me, same question, about Rich Cordray, your interactions this morning and how you felt about him.
Well, sure. You know, it is interesting. They were sitting next to each other, and I was sitting on the end. I kept offering to the editorial board to sit in between them. That's how heated and contested this thing got. And, you know, I look forward to the video being online. But Mr. Cordray, you know, there are things I respect about both men, and then there's a lot of disagreements I have with both men. I think at least Cordray is coming around on the issue of criminal justice reform, which I think is very important. It's yet another libertarian idea whose time has come, and that is just the fact that, you know, drug offenders, drug crimes, drug possession, we just have too many people in jail right now for these misdemeanors and drug crimes. And so, you know, the point about issue one and the opioid crisis came up today. Mr. Cordray is going to vote for it, and I am also for it, just in that, you know, we are basically treating the drug problems in our state like criminal problems, and they're actually health problems, and it's much cheaper to address drug crimes as health problems and not criminal problems. You know, I am advocating for pardoning and releasing all nonviolent drug offenders in Ohio, which, if you know, if you're a Tea Party person or want to be conservative with tax dollars, that's going to save over $500 million tax dollars a year. Our prison budget is out of control, our prison population. You know, the director of the Bureau of Prisons recently resigned, and he said himself that we have so many people in prison who should not be there. And that's what I think is at the heart of Issue 1 and criminal justice reform. And again, I don't think Issue 1 goes far enough, but there's not much else you can do, and a Republican state legislature just doesn't seem to get it. So, again, this is just another libertarian idea that I think can have crossover with Democrats and Republicans.
I think people listening to this, after that explanation, it seems as if you have more issue with Mike DeWine than Rich Cordray.
Well, no, I disagree with Rich Cordray on a multitude of issues. You just had asked me about, you know, what I thought of Mr. Cordray, and I basically have many disagreements. I mean, certainly over gun control, Medicaid expansion, obviously, I disagree with Mr. Cordray. Economic factors, he really wants to, you know, he's talking about putting a bond issue to get more money into state infrastructure. You know, these are things I disagree with Mr. Cordray on. I was just focusing on one area that I was actually just surprised that we did agree. But again, this is the nice thing about libertarians. I could work with the Republicans in the state legislature probably better than Mike DeWine could on things like gun control, Medicaid expansion, and cutting costs. We certainly have too many tax and spend Republicans in the state legislature. I have, you know, advocated to cut wasteful spending. I've advocated, you know, when I have the line item veto power, I'm going to need more pens, basically. So I you know, I have disagreements with both men, but that's the nice thing about libertarians. We can work with Republicans and Democrats on the issues that we agree on.
Now, in recent polls, is the newest poll that you're polling at 7%, is that the most recent information we have?
I do not know myself. The Innovation Ohio poll released at the beginning of September had me at 6%.
6%.
And there have been a lot of other polls after where my name's not even included. So we are working on getting our own polling together. But, you know, it's pretty hard to get an accurate read of where you're polling when a lot of times they don't even include your name.
I guess the question would be, do you think with very little time left before the election, in your mind, that you can win?
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, our ideas are winning ideas. When I ran for mayor, a multiple of my parts of my platform were absorbed by City Hall and the City Council. When I ran for U.S. Congress in 2010, I was sounding the warning bells about being fiscally conservative. Pat Tiberi and a bunch of the other Republicans kept driving up the debt under Bush and Cheney. It kept going up under Obama. And now, lo and behold, here we are, President Trump, $21 trillion national debt. That's my generation, the millennial generation, that inherits this. I'll also point out on social issues. You know, in 2010, I was talking about how the government shouldn't be involved with marriage. Republicans, you know, scoffed at that, and Democrats were in favor of civil unions at that time. And lo and behold, 5 years later, 2015, it becomes the law of the land. So I am consistently fascinated by the fact that Libertarian Party is a political party created in 1971. I'm born in 1983. And here they are, their ideas are catching on with the millennial generation. The millennials in Ohio voted for Gary Johnson by 25% in 2016. That's a real stat, and that's real progress, and it's very encouraging because what it shows is that as everyone slowly gets more and more tired of the bickering between the two-party system, the two different sides, this duopoly, people are looking for different options. And I have found, certainly, you know, our campaign is modest. If we had more money, I think we'd be able to get out our message a lot better. But we have a winning message. It's starting to win with future generations. And that's what I encourage people to do. If nothing else, we have to get a minimum of 3% to retain ballot access for the next 4 years. And I certainly would like to get much, much more than that. But I feel that our ideas are winning. And you see in other states, Libertarians are actually serving and getting elected. Democrats and Republicans are defecting and becoming elected Libertarians. And I think the only thing that really set us back was the fact that Republicans messed with our ballot access 4 years ago. So this is about the future, and I'm happy to be running with the Libertarian Party as a millennial. And if anyone wants to know any more, you can check out IrvineForOhio.com.
If you don't hit the ballot access measure, if you don't get that many votes, what will that say to you on Election Day?
Well, I'm not even going to think about that because I think we're definitely going to hit that threshold. So.
What can you do between now and then, because you won't be in the debate, that is going to help you get to the numbers you would need to win the state?
Well, we're going to continue to work our social media and door-to-door phone calls, yard signs. It's just like any other local election, really. It's just about getting out the name recognition. I mean, there are plenty of Republicans and Democrats who do not like either of their options with Mr. DeWine and Mr. Cordray. So it's really just, for us, about getting in the polls. True, we are not in this final debate, but it's hard to say how many people even watch these debates. You know, the fact that I was in the Cleveland.com meeting today and they put that video up, you know, it's about getting attention. It's about doing things like this, going through and doing interviews with the media that do acknowledge that we exist. So we just need to keep focusing on letting people know that we exist. We're going to put all our resources into that, boots on the ground, checks, calls, yard signs, certainly web presence, and we are actually getting some of our ads on radio and TV here in the coming weeks. So it's really just about letting people know that they have another option. And then when they start to look into us and they like our ideas, that's when we start to get the vote.
Now, the Green Party is also on the ballot, and they also have a gubernatorial candidate. How does the Libertarian Party differ from the Green Party?
Oh, we differ from them quite a bit. They're definitely more of the Dennis Kucinich progressive side of things. You know, there are areas where we do agree. You know, we both want to fast-track the medical marijuana, eventually see fully legal marijuana. We're both for criminal justice reform. I believe I am, at least with the Green Party, we're the only candidates that want to end the death penalty. So, you know, those are some issues where we agree, but, you know, I do not agree with the Green Party on issues like health care for everyone. Okay, well, how are you going to pay for it? Free college for everyone. Again, how are you going to pay for it? $15 an hour minimum wage. All right, well, you're killing small businesses, you know, so basically on economic issues, that's where you find a lot of stark differences between the Greens and the Libertarians.
Now, when it comes to the economics of Ohio, we do have a Republican governor, and I think most people think he's moving on to bigger things, or in his own opinion. What is your rating of Governor Kasich over the last 8 years?
Oh, I think he's been absolutely awful. I think there are three areas where I appreciate Mr. Kasich. Number one, he did create this $2 billion surplus here in the rainy day fund. That will certainly go down as part of his legacy. I also appreciate the fact that he actually has sent less people to death row at the actual finalization of the death penalty. He has killed less people than any governor before him. And I appreciate that because, I would like to see an end to the death penalty. As governor, I promise not to kill anybody. I also appreciate the fact that John Kasich has made bedhead acceptable for a governor at public events. I think that those are the three areas that I agree with him. But beyond that, everything else he's done has been absolutely dismal and just classic John Kasich. You know, he's so arrogant in so many areas. The way he dealt with Medicaid expansion, the way he's trying to shove through this gun control measures here at the last minute before he gets out of here. You know, you can tell these are all just moves towards the presidency. He really is chasing this chaotic dream that he's going to be president. And I can tell you right now, as someone who ran an anti-John Kasich PAC in 2014, and you can check out videos and anything else that we did, it's called Central Ohioans Countering Kasich, you can see a lot of the things that he did. He really ticked off a lot of Democrats. He ticked off a lot of Republicans. And then 2016 comes around, and no one cares about John Kasich. In fact, more people were wondering, well, who is John Kasich, than really considering any of his ideas. He's so unlikable. He really should just, after his term ends as governor, honestly just go away. I think that would be perfectly appropriate.
But you believe he will not go away. You believe he'll run for president?
Yeah, it's very clear he's got 2020 in mind. What I've heard from my sources is that he will probably have to run as an independent. And at that point, I just want to say, well, welcome to our struggle, buddy. You know, libertarians, greens, you know, third parties, alternative parties. It's very hard to exist on any ballot in any of the 50 states. So he's going to need millions and millions of dollars to do that. And then, you know, on top of that, he's going to have to actually be likable. And unfortunately, with him, that's just not possible.
But ultimately, even though you don't like the guy, as you have said, wouldn't that be a good thing if he was able to garner more votes than Ross Perot did, who I think in modern times, not Teddy Roosevelt times Wallace times, George Wallace, in modern times, Ross Perot has garnered more votes in 1992 than Gary Johnson ever did or any other independent libertarian Green Party candidate ever did. Wouldn't it be a good thing that John Kasich could run as an independent, whatever that would mean, in 2020 and garner maybe 15% of the vote?
Well, it would be good if it was an actual step for third political parties or independent political parties, but it wouldn't. It would be a step for John Kasich. That's the difference. Anything that John Kasich does is for John Kasich. So I don't think it would necessarily spark any type of enthusiasm from the people who've been advocating for a third political party, an independent political party, for all these decades. Because you're absolutely right. I mean, let me point out with Ross Perot, why did he do so well? Well, because he was in the debate. They allowed him to be in the debate. Look at Jesse Ventura when he became governor of Minnesota. He was included in the debates, and he had notoriety to go along with it. So, you know, there are certainly people from Jesse Ventura to Ross Perot to Ralph Nader to John Anderson in 1980 who did pretty well as a congressman running as an independent. Look, there are people who do advocate for the third party cause, the alternative party cause, but you can see throughout John Kasich's career, all the way to 2014, when he signed SB 193, he is no advocate for a third and alternative political parties. He's just an advocate for himself.
You know, interestingly enough, during the last election, the election of 2016, we've had Jesse Ventura on a couple times, and we even had John Anderson on before he passed away. And what's interesting about both of them, the reason they did what they did, in their own explanation, was Jesse Ventura said he never voted for a Republican or a Democrat, but John Anderson just was no longer in agreement with the Ronald Reagan Republican Party. And it seems like that's what John Kasich is. I mean, I think essentially he's still a Republican. He just doesn't agree with the Donald Trump Republican Party.
I would say, you know, as a student of political history myself, I do think the Republican Party is at a crossroads right now. You know, Bill Weld, the vice presidential candidate with Gary in 2016, talked about this when we were traveling around the country campaigning. You know, it is essentially the same point where the Whig Party was prior to the Civil War. You kind of had the Whigs split up into the Know-Nothing, which basically spoke about a lot of racist anti-Masonic views. And then you had the Republican Party was all about abolishing slavery. So I kind of see the same struggle right now within the Republican Party. You see a lot of libertarians, people who want to allow for personal freedom, but they also stick true to fiscal principles, fiscally conservative principles. They actually want to cut spending and cut money from the budget and cut taxes. And I think, you know, there's a real battle brewing within the Republicans, and I would say that 2016 was a big factor within that. I think the Libertarians, especially, again, talk about the millennial generation, Libertarian ideas are much more palatable for my generation, and I think we really are going to be the path forward in terms of conservatives in this country.
Travis, but in the 10 minutes we have left, I want to start back in 2016 and then work to this governor's race, because something that was interesting to me, because during the last election, we covered it very heavily on this station. We did the Republican convention and had a lot of local, or had national Jesse Jackson, Al Franken, Democrats on, and what I kept hearing from people was, we have to pick the lesser of two evils in the presidential election. And here's what I kept saying during that election. You know, however you vote is however you vote. But in 1992, I believe people who voted for Ross Perot wanted and thought he could be president. In 2016, when those people who voted for Gary Johnson, they knew nothing about his platform. They knew nothing about him. They just wanted to cast a protest vote. They didn't want to vote for Hillary, and they didn't want to vote for Trump, but they knew nothing about Gary Johnson except for the fact that he wanted to legalize marijuana, it seemed. That was the only issue that came through. It wasn't the days of Ross Perot, and he didn't get the votes Ross Perot got. And why is that?
Well, again, Ross Perot was allowed in the debate. He was a billionaire who funded his own campaign. So I would say those are two reasons why we didn't get Ross Perot level votes. I mean, that is just pure fact right there on that one. Secondly, I reject the notion that no one knew who Gary Johnson was and just voted for him because of the legalizing pot issue. People looked at Gary Johnson's record, 8 years governor of New Mexico. He did a great job. It's a blue state. He was a Republican governor, but all his policies that he implemented were libertarian. And his vice presidential running mate, Bill Weld, also 8 years as governor of Massachusetts. Same deal, blue state, Republican governor, did a lot of libertarian things that a lot of people liked. So in between the two of them, they had 16 years of executive experience, which is more than Hillary or Trump combined. So I definitely reject this notion that they were just a protest vote. I think 2016 broke the political system here in America. I think Democrats don't know if they're Democrats anymore. Republicans don't know if they're Republicans. Trump is an outsider breaking the Republicans. Bernie is an outsider breaking the Democrats. And so after that happened, I think a lot of people were looking for yet another outsider, and that's the Libertarian Party. That's Gary Johnson. But he had a record to back it up. And so did Bill Weld.
It's interesting because I remember Bill Wells and Gary Johnson when they had the CNN town hall before the election. And Wells was very against Donald Trump. He said he could live with Hillary. Hillary was better than Trump, but he disliked Donald Trump. But most people who look at that situation feel that if there had not been a Libertarian candidate, and I understand the argument against that, but that Donald Trump would not have been elected, that a Libertarian was never going to vote for Donald Trump. But some of them, like Wells, the vice presidential candidate, would have voted for Hillary. Certainly thought it was better than Trump. Did you see them as equally bad?
I think, yes, both Hillary and Trump would have been equally bad. Look, Bill Weld is allowed to have his opinion, and I think he's just basing it on the fact that at least Hillary had served in government before. I think that's kind of what his consensus was. But look, yeah, libertarians, and people like to blame libertarians for Trump. They almost blamed us for Hillary. We take votes from everybody. We take votes equally from Republicans, Democrats, as well as independents, as well as people who just would not vote and would just leave it blank, you know? I just want to mention on the marijuana issue again, the fact that people just voted for Gary because of that issue. I mean, it's a very popular issue, left and right. I mean, basically the marijuana issue is polling at 60-70% in favor of it just here in Ohio. And gosh, you look at 2016 in Florida, more people showed up to vote on the marijuana issue on the ballot, and then they left the presidential area blank for a lot of them. So, you know, I wouldn't you know, if Gary Johnson was a true protest candidate, you'd probably see a lot less people leaving that section blank. I think the people who voted for Gary respected Gary, wanted him to be president, and certainly saw that he was more qualified than either of the two candidates.
When you look at Ohio right now, what is the biggest problem? First, if you walked into the governor's mansion tomorrow, what is the first thing you would do? Number one.
Well, sure. Look, the three issues we hear about the most on the campaign trail is definitely, number one, the opioid crisis. This is ravaging communities. It knows no class, culture, color. It's impacting everybody. So, again, as I said, my solution would be to fast-track the medical marijuana program that was supposed to get started a month ago. Again, medical marijuana is a safe, legal alternative to opioids. It helps people wean it helps people wean off of opioids as well as heroin and dangerous drugs. And again, you know, the opioid crisis in states where they have ample or legal marijuana is 25% less deadly. So we need people on the pharmacy board who actually understand this and are not trying to stall it, which is basically what we've gotten here the last 2 years. So I would do that on day one and start addressing that. I would also audit Jobs Ohio, or at least fight to have it become transparent. I think, you know, we have a pretty good economy going right now in the country, but Ohio's is pretty stagnant comparatively. And that's because John Kasich's cronies are picking winners and losers in Jobs Ohio, and we have no idea. We need to find out what they're doing in there. And if they're not doing right by the people of Ohio, then we need to get rid of that department. I would also just add education. We need serious education reform. The ECOT scandal is absolutely horrendous. You know, this doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat. Again, I mean, the fact is $80 million went to ECOT, and that's just what we know about it, probably even more over the span of all these years. So we need a serious education reform. Our school funding methods have been unconstitutional for over 20 years. The courts found it that way, and Republicans and Democrats haven't fixed it. We need to put more emphasis on school choice and children, not punish people who want to send their kids to, you know, to charter schools or private schools, or even keep them at home with a homeschool. But the way we fund our schools right now with basically a property taxes is just, it's unsustainable, and again, it's unconstitutional. So I would start to seek real education reform within the state legislature, try to work with Republicans and Democrats on this issue. But I also, you know, understand the governor doesn't have all the answers on education. So I'm definitely opposed to Kasich's new plan about trying to put all the state's education systems under the office of the governor. I think that's just a bad thing.
Whose fault is the ECOT scandal? Now, the Cordray and DeWine seem to blame each other on this one. Where does the fault lie, in your opinion?
Oh, I think it definitely lies with both parties. It just happened on both of their watches. It doesn't really matter. Both of them, they keep going after each other. It's just another one of those areas where I finally agree with both of them, that they're both to blame on the ECOT issue. I think they're both to blame on the opioid crisis. I mean, ECOT certainly gave more money to Republicans, and you can definitely see a lot of paper trails leading more so to the Republicans, and that's because the Republicans were in power. If the Democrats were in power, ECOT would have been able to basically do the same thing. That's why we really need, you know, again, independent, nonpartisan leadership, not just out of the governor's office, but, you know, we have a great auditor candidate, Robert Coogan, who's actually been an auditor. He's the only candidate on the ballot for state auditor who's actually had auditor experience. So, you know, this is just another symptom of the duopoly, right? The left-right paradigm. And you can see it certainly with ECOT, and now they're going to blame each other for it. But at the end of the day, we got to get back those millions and millions of taxpayer dollars, and we need to start finding a way to just have good institutions that focus on teaching kids.
Two questions before I let you go, Travis. If both parties are equally bad, which is what you've pretty much said here, how is that possible? How is that they're both, because they do believe different things. Now, in some ways, they are the same, but in other ways, they're not. How are they equally bad?
Oh, man. Well, how much time do we have? I mean, I'm not sure where to start. Look, both parties have failed their people. You know, both these parties, when they get too much power, you see that turn into corrupt entities. You see it you know, in Chicago with the Democrats, and I think you see it, the list, especially these last 8 years with the Republicans in Ohio. You become susceptible to lobbyists, as you saw with Cliff Rosenberger and the FBI investigation. You see it with pay-to-play, the fact that ECOT was able to give money to state legislatures to get what they wanted and to basically get all these taxpayer dollars. It just seems to go all around. And what's nice, again, about the elected libertarians we have in states all across the country, from Nebraska to Texas to California to New Mexico to New Hampshire, you know, we're independent. We're independent from this. We cut spending. We say what we mean, and we mean what we say. So I am very encouraged, again, by the fact that, you know, Gary Johnson, as much as anyone wants to criticize him, the fact that all the money in the media was against him, he was able to earn 25% of the millennial vote right here in Ohio just because of his ideas, just because of what he stood for. And I think that's really going to keep happening. I think we're finally headed away from just the two-party system, and we're going to do what so many other countries are doing, and that is have multiple options when we go to the ballot box. And I do think, you know, our ideas are already winning. Libertarian ideas are already winning. Now it's just time for our candidates to start winning as well.
And final question before I let you go, and I do appreciate you coming on, and I hope when you pass through here you'll stop by and come on more often. Travis Irvine, the Libertarian candidate for governor. But the question is, if you had to vote for Cordray or DeWine, I'm not talking about Republican and Democrat here, if you had to vote for one of them, who would you vote? Who is the lesser of two evils, as people would like to say?
Well, I don't think either of them are particularly evil men, but if I was faced with only that option, I would probably do what so many Tea Party people are doing down in Butler County and in Toledo. At least before they knew that we existed, I would probably leave it blank. And that is, you know, nothing worse. That's the ultimate wasted vote. That's why I'm so glad the Libertarians and our volunteers work so hard to get us back on the ballot. People have another option. I look forward to voting for myself in this election. But no, neither of these guys are truly evil. They just have made, I think, some poor decisions as public servants. And I just don't know if either of them can really deal with the problems that we face. So I'm happy to support Libertarian candidates up and down the ballot this year, and I hope other people do as well. You can check out more on our campaign and other candidates at IrvineForOhio.com or LPO.org.
Travis Irvine, the Libertarian candidate for governor. Travis, it's been a pleasure, and I hope you will come back and join us again.
Thanks so much, Scott. Anytime.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Travis Irvine, there you go. Now all we need is the Green Party, and we'll be finished up with having all the gubernatorial candidates on. We're done for the day. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1.